the WJR Gardening Show, sponsored by English Gardens. Visit an English Gardens location near you this weekend and get 40% off one regular priced item with code WJR23. That's code WJR23. Now here's your host of the WJR Gardening Show, Ann Thomas.
Today is Earth Day. I'm Ann Thomas, and I am here with Daryl Youngquest. He is a buyer and a merchandiser for English Gardens. And Daryl, today it's all about planting plants and shrubs, and it's going to be a really interesting show.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here to talk about everything that you can plant in the ground right now and how to plant it properly and care for your plants.
An interesting and informative show coming up next. Welcome to the WJR Gardening Show, sponsored by English Gardens. I'm Ann Thomas, and I am here with Daryl Youngquest. He is the buyer and merchandiser for English Gardens. Daryl, it's great to have you on the show.
Well, thank you. I'm not the only buyer for English Gardens. I do buy all of the hardy outdoor plants for English Gardens and a few other things.
Daryl, today you are the buyer and the merchandiser.
Oh, isn't that nice of you?
I want you to tell our listeners, though, a little bit about yourself.
Okay. Well, I've been in the business since 1987.
Wow.
Worked as a maintenance person, first off, and then loved the plants. So I started working out in the nursery, which turned into ordering the plants and talking to customers, and I've been doing that ever since.
Now, it's pretty interesting. You order and buy a lot of different product for English Gardens. So tell us a little bit about that.
Okay. Well, I do buy a lot of different things. I buy most of the herbs for English Gardens, citrus plants. I buy all of the bulbs, not the seeds, but the bulbs, the perennials, shrubbery, landscape supplies, which is soils and mulches, things like that, concrete garden art type things like statues, fountains, bird baths, and Christmas greens, the fresh Christmas greens.
Do you travel around the country, around the world, to take a look at what's available for English Gardens?
I travel the country, and I can say out of the country to Canada.
Okay.
Not really any place else for bringing plant material in. I would love to do that, but there are quarantines for plant material from overseas. So
that's interesting.
Really keep it to the lower 48.
The United States. So let's talk first a little bit about the hardy plants. What kind of plants do you buy for this area for English Gardens? What plants work?
Okay. Well, this area was recently rezoned to zone 6, but we have since then had some pretty tough winters. So I really buy plants that are hardy to zone 5, which means that they will survive a minimum cold temperature of minus 20 degrees. We typically don't get that, but occasionally you will have some. So that's where I like to concentrate most of my purchasing, to make sure that the customers are successful with their plants.
Oh, that's good to know. Now, are you also buying for soil and perhaps, I don't know, maybe to keep the deer away or anything like that?
Well, there are lots of plants that the deer don't eat, but they are animals. So if they're really hungry and there's nothing else around, they do eat the plants. So when we say deer resistant, not deer proof, and then there's a low, medium, and high browse risk for deer, the things that they're likely or less likely to eat. There are surprisingly lots of things that they won't eat or are less likely to eat. My neighborhood where I live has usually got about 20, 30 deer that come through, so I've learned through experience what works and what doesn't work.
And I imagine that is extremely helpful for English Gardens customers who come here and need help with that, because I've seen some neighborhoods where they basically have decimated the landscaping.
Yeah, it is. Nothing is better when you're talking to customers than personal experience.
Yes.
We find that people that do gardening are best at being the associates helping customers make those decisions.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Now, where do you get the bulbs from?
The bulbs are, for the most part, they come from the Netherlands. Some of the bulbs will come from Mexico, like elephant ears or lower states. We get some daffodils from Oregon. So they come from different areas.
Yeah, it's good to know.
Most of them do come from the Netherlands.
Not surprising that they're coming from the Netherlands, right?
Not really, no.
Yes. Yeah,
all the tulips and daffodils, all the pretty stuff.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So today's Earth Day, so it's perfect that we're doing this show.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about what we should be doing right now in our gardens.
So, you know, the first thing you have to do before you do any planting is, you know, have your garden ready. You know, do the prep work, clean it up. You know, it's been a long winter. You know, rake up anything, get the debris out of there, and then decide what you want to do. If you're going to do some planting, is it going to be a vegetable garden? Is it going to be shrubs or perennials? Or is it going to be a tree? And then find out what your soil is like. And see if you need to maybe amend it for what you intend to plant there. Gardens like a vegetable garden, they are pretty, they need a lot of fertilizer. So, you know, your nutrient level needs to be a little bit higher than, say, for perennials or shrubs, which can be a little lower. Those plants are less demanding than the ones that are going to yield edible crops for you.
And I believe that English Gardens has this great service where you can have the soil tested. Can you talk about that?
We do. You can bring in a soil sample. We usually like about 2 cups of soil from I think about 6 inches down or so. Don't want it wet. We also don't want you to mechanically heat it and to try and dry it out. So let it air dry if it's a little bit moist, because that heating can change the results of the test. But you bring that in, and we can perform the test to tell you what the pH, which is the acid or base level of the soil, and then the nutrient content. And then make recommendations for what you might need to add or amend to the soil, given what you want to do, like what you want to plant there.
How do you decide what's the best place for a plant or a tree or a bush? How do you make the decision?
Well, if a sunny area is best, usually, and if you've got sun, you can plant just about anything. But each plant has its own specific requirements. Some will grow in shade, some will grow in part sun, some will grow in full sun. And like I said, most all of them grow in mostly sun. All of the growers I go around the country, they don't really have shady areas where they grow things. Everything's pretty much grown in the sun, except for they might protect some things that will get a little burn. But sun is best, and there's lots of things that will grow in a shadier spot, too.
So with regard to trimming and pruning, what's your advice with regard to trimming and pruning bushes, flowers, plants like hydrangeas? Are you supposed to do that in the fall, or do you do it in the spring?
That's a great question. It's actually dependent upon the plant. And a general rule is right after the plant flowers is the best time to prune it.
Really?
That's usually the best, because the plants have developed their flower buds. Even now, there'll be some things that will, if it blooms in the spring, if you prune it before it blooms, you'll prune off all the flowers. So if it's a summer flowering plant, those are usually the ones that are okay to prune in the spring. And then if it's a spring flowering plant, you prune it early summer.
What about the hydrangea? That is a whole thing for me with regard to trying to figure out when to do it to make sure that it flowers in the summer.
So it depends upon what type of hydrangea. There are 5 basic types of hydrangeas for our climate. The most hardy is the arborescent or the Annabelle type hydrangea, the ones with the big white snowball blooms.
Yes.
Those bloom the earliest. That's typically late May to early June is when they'll start to bloom. And they bloom on first year wood, which means any growth that they produce this year, they will produce a flower on. Other types like the macrophyllas, which are the most desired or sought after because they're pink or they're blue, and you can change the color of that.
They're beautiful,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah. Those, a lot of those bloom on old wood, so that stem has to survive winter and not be pruned off in order to flower. Some of the newer varieties of those bloom on new wood, but that it takes until summer before it's matured enough to produce a flower bud. And then the panicle hydrangeas, the cone-shaped, like a limelight hydrangea, on first-year wood, so you can prune those in the spring, too. Pink or blue, ball-shaped ones, prune those in the summer. The rest of them you can either do either in the late fall or the early spring.
So let's say that you don't do it right.
Yeah.
Do you just hang on for a season and then things will straighten back out the next season, or do you start all over again?
No, it's exactly what you do is you've only set it back for that season. You know, stems are basically like hair. If you prune it, you make a mistake, it's going to grow more. It'll be fine. So if you pruned your hydrangea at the wrong time, just give it the time, find out what is the right time to prune your particular variety, prune it then and you'll be okay.
Let's take a quick break, and we will continue this conversation on the WJR Gardening Show in just a few minutes.
Welcome back to the WJR Gardening Show, sponsored by English Gardens. Visit an English Gardens location near you this weekend and get 40% off one regular priced item with code WJR23. That's code WJR23. Once again, here's your host, Ann Thomas.
I am here with Daryl Youngquest, and he is a buyer and merchandiser for English Gardens. And today he is our buyer and merchandiser for English Gardens. And Daryl, let's talk now a little bit about perennials. Every year, honestly, I have to stop and think, okay, what's the difference between a perennial and an annual? Help.
Yeah, that's a great question. It does throw a lot of people. Annuals are plants that survive that one season. Usually they're the things that bloom their heart out until they're done. So that would be your bedding plants or your vegetables that don't survive winter. You know, you can leave them in the ground. They're not coming back. They might reseed themselves, but the plant itself is not coming back. Perennial is a herbaceous, or it's a leafy type of plant that emerges out of the ground, goes through its whole life cycle. It grows, it flowers, it dies down, and then it will come back the next season.
What are some examples of perennials that we would recognize here in Michigan?
Oh, hostas.
That's what I knew you were going to say that.
Daylilies, allium is popular, peony plants. Those are popular, false indigo, lots of different things. But typically, if you keep seeing it year after year, it's like, boy, I see that plant there every year. That's a perennial. And they typically only get better each year, get bigger and fuller, develop a better root system.
So let's say somebody wants to develop and plant a beautiful perennial garden.
Yeah.
Can you give us some advice on how to do it?
Well, you have to decide how you're going to view that area, because that does make a difference on what you plan it out for. But you have to think about the perennials, unlike the annuals that bloom all season. Perennials have their bloom season. Some bloom in the early spring, some bloom later spring, summer, or fall. So you're planning your garden out to ideally have color all year. Something will bloom, come up, and then will fade. Something else will come up, bloom, and then fade along. You can add taller plants in the back, shorter plants in the front, you know, border plants, keep them low so they don't hide the things that come up in the middle and the back of the garden. Ornamental grasses work great as a plant that starts out short and gets bigger and bigger as the season progresses. And those are nice filler type plants. But generally, you're looking at when is the bloom time of the plant? How big does it get? You also have to consider the light exposure. As we talked about before, some plants need sun, some plants shade, or part sun.
You know, it makes sense to pay attention to size, too,
yeah,
because you could end up, you know, planting something that you really like, but then all of a sudden it's growing too high and too wide, and it's taking over another plant. So you do really need to pay attention.
You need to pay attention to that. The color of the foliage a lot of times is a desirable thing. There's coral bell that have green, yellow, red, purple, and black foliage. So within each type of plant, you can pick some color or some texture that will, you know, accent an area nicely.
What are some perennials that at this time, on this day, on Earth Day, that the deer here in Michigan don't like at all?
Well, you know, there's lots of perennials that the deer won't eat. False indigo is one of the earlier blooming perennials that the deer don't really like very much. Typically, hence the name indigo, you would think blue, but there are some yellow varieties and some pink varieties. Peony plants are great plants that the deer won't eat. Beautiful big flowers.
They are beautiful.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Those are very nice looking. Allium, you know, like the Globemaster, purple balls. Now, allium is a great plant because you can get several varieties of allium to be in bloom at different times of the year. Some bloom in the early spring, mid-spring, summer, and some bloom in the fall. So if you plan it out right, you can have an allium blooming almost all year. Not the same one, but different ones.
And they're very pretty plants.
They're very pretty plants, and pollinators love them.
So how do you feel about adding annuals into a perennial garden?
Oh, I think it's a great idea because the perennials won't bloom all year. You can add that little splash of color here and there. So that works out really good to just carry your color theme throughout your garden.
And what about the soil? What kind of soil and maybe dirt should you be using in a perennial garden? And also mulch.
Yeah. The soil is important because that's where the plants are going to live, and that's how they're going to live there all the time. So a nice organic soil is best for all plants. None of the plants like a hard, compacted soil. So you want to work it a little bit, add some organic matter. Compost is great. Topsoil. These are all wonderful things to add to your existing garden. Work it into the soil a little bit. Mulch is great for regulating the soil temperature, and it keeps the weeds down by restricting the amount of sunlight that's hitting the soil. Because when the sunlight hits the soil, that's what triggers seeds to germinate. That's why you have a lot of weeds growing. So if you can cover that with a 2-3 inch layer of mulch, not only do you help regulate that soil temperature, you're also keeping the weeds from germinating.
How far do you keep the mulch from the actual plant and plant root?
That's a great question because the mulch does restrict the growth of things. If you want to keep it a couple inches away is best, especially on trees. I don't know if you've seen on the roadways where these
yes.
huge mounds of mulch, that's not really the desired way. That can not only choke the plant out, it can also cause suckering roots or girdering roots that will come out and girder the trunk, which can bring around the tree's demise.
What about
a couple inches away.
What about putting down weed killer before you get going with a perennial garden or an annual garden? Is that a good idea, and how do you do that?
Okay, so you're talking about the pre-emergent weed killers, like the preen or something
like so that? That you are not weeding every day,
yeah,
Darryl.
I know it's not the funnest thing in the garden to do. It depends upon what you want to achieve out of your garden. If you put down a pre-emergent herbicide like preen, which creates a barrier that stops seeds from germinating, that will also stop any perennials that might be reseeding themselves to further along. So if you have planted, say, biennial plants like foxglove or some of the other biennials, hollyhocks, you won't have them come back. But if you are, you know, you have an area where you've got a daylily and you're not worried about the reseeding, you can put the pre-emergent herbicide around those plants. It's best to keep it away a little bit. The big thing is you have to have that undisturbed. So that's going to be one of your last steps. You're going to plant everything, sprinkle the the herbicide around, you can put some mulch over the top of it and then walk away from it at that point. If you dig in that area, you've disturbed that that barrier, and then weeds can come up in that spot.
So what would you do in your garden? It kind of sounds like you're not a huge fan of the preen and that type of product.
Well, I'm a beekeeper. I have bees. I don't like to do too much in the chemical thing in my garden, even though there's times where I have for certain problems. And I do get on my hands and knees a lot and pull weeds. But mulch is really one of the things I do to help keep the weeds down.
So you're a fan of the mulch?
I am a big fan of the mulch. It's great. It only breaks down into organic matter, which further enriches the soil. I actually like cocoa shell mulch, which is, it's not for everybody, but it smells like chocolate. It's the shell of the chocolate beans. It develops a green or an orange mold for the first couple weeks, or it can, which kind of freak people out. But it smells like chocolate, and it's the only natural mulch that actually turns darker as it ages. And so you put this beautiful brown mulch down, and then a couple months later, it's all gray, right?
Yes, I have experienced that.
It's bleached out. But the cocoa shell actually turns to black. And it turns into a good soil, and it's the only one that actually has a nutritional value as it breaks down.
Oh, that's good to know.
But not for everybody.
Let's take a quick break, and I do want our WJR listeners to know that if they've got questions for Daryl Youngquest, they can go to WJR.com and look for the WJR Gardening Show, and they will be able to put their questions in, and down the road we'll ask you, Daryl, to answer some of the questions from our listeners, because this is just fantastic information, and I think I know you'd be available if they had anything at all to ask you.
Be happy to.
You are listening to the WJR Gardening Show. We'll be back right after this. This is the WJR Gardening Show, and I'm Ann Thomas. I'm here with Daryl Youngquest. He is a buyer and merchandiser for English Gardens. And Daryl, great conversation today here about planting a beautiful garden. Yeah. I want to turn now to shrubs.
Okay.
You do a lot of work with regard to shrubs. So let's first of all just talk about some of the more popular shrubs that we see here in the state of Michigan.
Okay. Well, far and away, hydrangea is probably the most popular
and
shrub.
And my favorite.
Yeah, they're beautiful. Beautiful flowers, long-lasting. Several different ones get different heights. So hydrangea is one of the most popular shrubs that are out there. Other popular ones are boxwood, the ones that help keep neighbor relations good, the arborvitae. You know. those
kind
are
of
very
a fence.
Popular. Yeah, you know, if out of sight, out of mind is always good.
Yes.
And butterfly bush.
What's that?
Butterfly bush, as you would think, attracts butterflies. You don't grow butterflies on it, but it seems like it, because if you've got a flower on a butterfly bush, there's always a butterfly on it. They produce a long panicle, which is a cluster of tiny little flowers, anything from 6 inches to 18 inches long, depending upon the variety. And it's a summer type bloomer.
So, sounds pretty.
Yeah, those are really nice. Roses, very popular. Every time you see a rose, what do? You put your nose in it to see if it's got a nice smell to it, right? And they're starting to do more work breeding roses that have, bringing that fragrance back.
Oh, that's interesting.
You know, for a while, they were trying to breed the roses so they were disease resistant, and they still are, but what happened is they bred a lot of the fragrance out of those roses, so now we're working at bringing that fragrance back.
So is this a myth, or is it true that taking care of roses isn't the easiest thing to do?
I think it depends on who you talk to and what their level is, because plants really don't require a whole lot of work. If you have a problem on a plant, then it can be it can seem like it's a big issue. But roses aren't usually too much more trouble than any other type of plant.
Do you have to do anything special with them, like maybe a special fertilizer or just extra care during the season?
Any plant that gives you a lot tends to require a little bit of extra. So if it's going to produce a lot of fruit or it's going to produce a lot of flowers, it usually is a hungry plant and likes to be fertilized on a regular basis. So roses like that, you know, there's specific fertilizer for tomatoes and berry plants. Nothing different for roses. They like a little bit extra. But one of the big key things to roses is sunshine. You get the most roses when they're planted in as much sun as you can possibly give the plant.
And that applies to all varieties?
Yeah, there's a couple that will tolerate less, but they'll still do better in the full sun than they will in a part sun area.
Now, what about planting bushes? What's the secret there? Can you give us some tips on how to do it and do it right?
Sure. Planting is one of the biggest areas where you might have some problems if you don't plant it properly. So with any plant, you're going to get it in a container. It's going to come in a pot that it was grown in. And that soil level at the top of the pot is what we consider the ground level. Whenever you're digging a hole, you want to dig the hole 2 to 3 times as wide as the container, but really not any deeper than that container is. So wider is better than deep. And you situate the plant so the top of the root ball, what the soil that's at the top of the pot, that's the top of the root ball, that is at your ground level or slightly above your ground level. And then you would put the starter fertilizer. We like to use Espoma Biotone. And then a soil conditioner, which is it's a composted pine bark. And you mix that 50-50 with your existing soil. We like to say, you dig a hole 2 to 3 times as wide as a container is. Half the soil that you've taken out, you're going to put back in, mix with the soil conditioner and Biotone starter fertilizer that's got mycorrhizae and beneficial bacteria that really help the root system establish really good.
Now, what about putting fruit trees, berry trees into your landscaping?
Yeah, I have done this a lot in my own yard. I like to browse, because I'm out there weeding quite a bit. So I've got blueberry plants, which are especially nice because they're attractive plants even when they're not in flower. They have a beautiful fall color to them, and a lot of them don't get too large, especially the newer bushel and berry type blueberries. But I'll have blueberry plants, raspberry plants, and, you know, just throughout the day when I'm doing some weeding or some gardening and there's some fruit ready, I'll just go out there and just pick some fresh fruit. Nothing's better than if you grow it in your yard.
Oh, it sounds wonderful. But what about the deer?
Yeah, the deer can be a problem. They will eat. If you like to eat it, they'll like to eat it too. I have found for my garden, I have the back area, the backyard is fenced in with a deer fence. If there are other types of sprays that you can spray on your plants that the deer don't like the smell of, but you have to reapply those because they'll get used to it or they'll wash off. Plant Skid is one of our most popular ones. There's Liquid Fence. And we have several repellents. You can stop by our stores and take a look for different types of animals that might be bothering your plants. But yeah, deer can be a problem for fruit plants.
And it's my understanding that the smart thing with the repellents is to maybe rotate them, different kinds,
right?
Because they get used to it.
They do get used to the smell, and it is good to have 2 or 3 different ones with different ingredients that you use in a rotation. And you have to remember, if the plant grew, that new part is unprotected. So as the plant grows, every 2 or 3 weeks you should be reapplying.
Now, what about boxwood? It seems to me that some of the boxwoods, for some reason, they're not interested in them. Maybe the ones with that waxy, leafy? Yeah.
The deer really do avoid all boxwood. They're, as far as I know, there isn't a boxwood that they will eat. It's a very versatile plant. Grows in sun or shade, and the deer don't eat it, and it's takes very well to pruning. So that's a wonderful plant, one of our one of our big important plants that we sell at the store.
And how about the arborvita? I know there are some they like and some they don't.
Yeah, that's true. There are the American arborvitae, which is Thuja occidentalis. Emerald green is the most popular. They love those. So anything in the occidentalis family, they'll eat that. And then there's the Western arborvitae, which is Thuja pocata. We're finding they tend not to eat that very much. And I tested that out this year. I planted a whole bunch outside my fence, and the deer didn't touch any of them. So it's the variety, the number one variety in that type is called Green Giant. And their namesake is they grow very large. So we've got some new varieties. There's a new variety called Northern Spire, which doesn't grow as tall and doesn't grow as wide. Fits more into the smaller landscapes, doesn't take up a lot of space.
And are you a fan of covering the bushes and the plants, the perennials, in the winter with like a burlap product?
If you're planting something that requires that protection and you've got it in an area that is harsh, like you're out in the country or up on a hill where a lot of wind comes through, especially things like broadleaf evergreens, rhododendrons, azaleas, or Japanese maple that might be a little bit more sensitive, it's really important that you do that. It's like just going outside, putting on a windbreaker. You know, it's that added layer of protection that really is important to do on a lot of plants.
This is good to know. Let's continue this conversation in just a few minutes. You are listening to the WJR Gardening Show. We'll be back right after this.
Welcome back to the WJR Gardening Show, sponsored by English Gardens. Visit an English Gardens location near you this weekend and get 40% off one regular priced item with code WJR23. That's code WJR23. Once again, here's your host, Ann Thomas.
And if you have any questions, please go to WJR.com to the WJR Gardening Show page, and our guest, Daryl Youngquest, will take any of your questions. He is a buyer and a merchandiser for English Gardens. And Daryl, this has been a great conversation today. Very helpful advice for amateur gardeners and professional gardeners, too, I would say. Let's kind of, as we wrap up this show, first of all, talk again about proper planting. You know, making sure that you're putting the plant deep enough. Question, what about for annuals? You know, just impatience. How far in do those little impatiens have to go?
Yeah, well, I don't know if we were listening before, but when as deep as it is in the container, that's as deep as you go.
Oh, so it's the same for that.
Yeah. Yeah, bulbs are different. You know, when you're planting a bulb, it's kind of like a seed, where you usually go three times the depth of how tall the bulb is. But for any living plant that has a root system to it, whatever the depth in the container that it is, that's where it goes. And as I said before, the soil level at the top of the container, whether it's a flat of impatiens or whatever it is, that's your ground level. Don't ever want to put extra soil on top of the plant's root system. That tends to choke the plant off. And if you do accidentally get a little bit of soil on top of it, you want to make sure it does not touch the stem of the plant. That's restrictive to the plant. It can hold moisture against the stems, which constant moisture on a part of the plant that is not intended to be covered will rot out, and then the plant will die from that.
So what about the watering? I think some people either don't water enough or overwater. Give us some advice with regard to that.
That's a great question. We usually find that people, you know, water it after they plant it, and then, you know, you can quickly forget about the plant because it's just sitting there, or maybe it's not in part of the garden that you're monitoring very much. But anything that you've planted should be watered, should be checked every couple of days. You know, the bigger the plant is, the more water it's going to require. Whether you have a sprinkler system that's watering it or you're watering it by hand, you need to make sure that the plants are getting water on a regular basis. All growing season long, if as the temperatures warm up, Plants will require more and more water, especially if they develop, turn into a bigger plant with more leaves to it. The larger the surface area of the plant, the more water it's going to transpire out of its leaves, more water it's going to use up. So we like to say check your plants every couple of days. It depends upon what your soil is like. If you have a sandy soil that drains very fast, you might have to water twice a day if you haven't amended your soil to retain some of that moisture. If you just planted it in the sand, you're going to be watering 2 to 3 times a day, especially in the summertime. If you have clay soil, you need to, there's a special way to handle that. You're planting high because the clay is like a bowl. It will hold water, and constant water is not good for the plant. It rots the roots out. So we offer a guide on how to plant properly for your different soil types. In clay soil, plant high, which is half of the root ball should be above the ground level, and you're going to bring a mound of fresh soil up to the height of the root ball, the top of the root ball, but not on top of it. So you're making a little mound, and the wider the mound is, the better the plant is. We if they're large areas, we call that a berm, and in other areas, raised planting.
Sure.
Areas, yeah. And then if you build a little donut ring around the edge of the root system of the plant, what that does is that captures that water and allows it to sink down instead of running away from the roots. So you're making a moat, allowing the water to slowly settle into the ground.
Oh, that's good advice. How close should annuals be planted? That's always something every year I stand there and think, okay, is this too close? Do I need more?
Yeah, the more the better usually. You know, depends on the annual. But if we're talking about impatiens or begonias and you're doing a large bed, no more than 6 inches apart. 4 to 6 inches apart is usually ideal for that type of plant, but it does depend. You know, some of the super tunias, you can go 8 inches or a foot apart. It just depends upon the size of the plant.
Are you a fan of the in-ground irrigation systems that are planted in some gardens?
Yeah, I am. The drip irrigation.
Yes.
I'm a huge fan of that. I've got drip irrigation in several areas, especially around my patio. On all of my pots, on all of my hanging baskets, I've got that hooked into the sprinkler system, so I can go on a buying trip in the summertime and I don't have to worry about watering anything. It's getting watered every day when my sprinklers go off. So those are of huge benefit.
And with regard to planting in pots, would you rather plant in ground? Or do you like the idea of seeing some potted plants around the landscape?
I like some potted plants. It really depends on the type of plant. So like we said in the beginning, we're zone 5. Plants won't survive in a container through the winter in our climate. You know, a lot of those magazines have those pots sitting by the house and you always have them there. That doesn't work in our climate.
But it looks so good.
It looks really good. What you can do is have that. Usually planting annuals in there is the best way, and then you're just going to get rid of them. Or you could intermix some perennials or some shrubs in there and then move those into the ground for the winter time. You know, the last case would be you could take those pots and put them in a cold garage through the winter, make sure that you're watering every month in the winter time. But hardy plants generally don't survive in a pot through our winter.
And are you a fan of starting any plants in the house and then putting them outside when we're ready?
Yeah, you can do that as long as you've got the right spot for it. You know, you need a sunny area. So a south-facing window is usually best. Sometimes you want to have a heating pad because if the soil is cold and it's sunny, the plants don't respond well to that. And then you just have to pay attention to how long it takes the plants to mature. A lot of people will do that for peppers and tomatoes, so get a jump on the season. You just have to time out your planting where they're not too long in the house and they stretch too much.
Daryl Youngquest, it was really nice to meet you. Thank you for this great advice today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, it was wonderful being here. Thank you for having me.
And Daryl is a buyer and merchandiser for English Gardens. You've been listening to the WJR Gardening Show, sponsored by English Gardens. I'm Ann Thomas. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.